Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hey there, my name is Bree.
And I'm Suze.
We're the hosts of Crime and Spirits, a true crime and cocktail podcast. Do you love spooky stories and all things true crime?
How about themed cocktails? Do you love those too?
Well, that's perfect, because so do we.
Yeah, in fact, we love them so much, we made an entire podcast all about it.
Every week, we bring you a new episode that covers a different case or topic of interest, but first, we'll need drinks.
Don't you worry, we've got you covered there. Every week, we'll teach you how to make a handcrafted cocktail that ties into the theme or topic in some way.
So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much every other platform available.
New episodes roll out every Sunday.
So buckle up.
And sip tight.
We can't wait to talk some true crime with you. Bye.
Welcome to Bad Axe Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Blinka.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron.
Bad Axe is brought to you by the Podmoth Media Network. Check out Podmoth for more great podcasts. You can support the show and get over 2 years of bonus episodes over at patreon.com/badaxepod. You also get ad-free episodes. There is a link to the Patreon in our show notes, and membership start at just $1. Alternatively, we also do a subscription through your podcast app. It's $5 a month, and you get our mini bonus and our full-length bonus episode every single month, which is super exciting. I know that there are people that are annoyed by having subscription episodes in their feed, and I apologize for that, but this is just something we need to do in order to keep the podcast going. You can also support the show for free by leaving us a positive review and by telling a friend about us. Now, on to today's case. Today, we are going to Washington, D.C. in March 2017. Washington, D.C. is well known as the capital of the United States. It's sandwiched between the states of Maryland and Virginia, and it's home to nearly 700,000 residents, which is pretty huge. It's a popular city with tourists who want to see the nation's capital, and it's quite lovely in a lot of ways. A lot of great architecture, a lot of monuments.
It's pretty. Museums. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff to see there. I visited once when I was a kid.
I have never been to Washington, D.C. in real life.
I might have to take you. Like, you and I like museums, and I mean, like, there's a lot of cool museum stuff there, so maybe you and I should go and do Museum stuff.
Oh my god, are you making eyebrows at me about museums?
Yeah.
I feel bad because I was about to say, like, I'm a slut for museums. But then I remembered that lady that said that I sound stupid sometimes. And I was like, maybe it's because of things like that.
That lady is a dumb bitch.
Hot takes over here. All right. Even though Washington, D.C. is super popular with tourists, it's also not the safest city. It has a very high crime rate, and in the 90s, actually earned the nickname as, quote, the murder capital of the United States, unquote, because of its record high numbers.
That sucks.
Of murder.
That sucks.
I know, which is weird, because I feel like a lot of people blame New Orleans and Chicago for being murder cities or whatever. Houston's also pretty murdery, especially in the 90s. I wasn't here then. I lived in a small town in the 90s that's like 2 hours away from Houston, but it was, from what I've heard, quite violent.
Yeah, I also lived in a small town that was about 2 hours away, a different small town.
Yes,
but
in a different direction.
In a different direction, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I imagine that it probably was very murdery. So,
still, Washington, D.C. is home to a lot of important institutions, so it's always going to draw people to it. Back in 2017, 34-year-old Karina Celeste Mitten Miel was living her best life. At the time, she was temporarily living in D.C. as she worked on an art exhibit to be held at the Corcoran Gallery at George Washington University. Also, the word George Washington is very popular this week because there's a lot of George Washington things in this case because Washington, D.C. But also, we watched Disappeared, the Bradley Sisters, which we are now obsessed with. I had heard about that case before, but I feel like I just never really, like, dove into every single detail. But as those of you who watched it will know, the moms of the two girls who disappear, her boyfriend was named George Washington. And you can't not focus on the fact that his name is George Washington because everyone keeps saying it. And they'll be like, I saw George Washington taking this, or George Washington was doing that, or George Washington is taking us to get cake. And it's like, it sounds ridiculous because George Washington.
Yeah. And the most ridiculous thing is when you're sitting there being like, George Washington might be the killer. And you're just, I can't not see the like George Washington with the white, with the white wig being like the killer, and like George Washington in an orange jumpsuit. But it's not like,
it's like you sound like you're a crazy person.
Yeah. But it's not like actual George Washington. It's it's like the caricature from a painting. Like photoshopped on top of like a dude in an orange jumpsuit. And it looks even more ridiculous. And it makes it so hard to take it seriously when it's such a serious and sad tragic case.
I know. And then like, George Washington is showing up every 10 seconds.
Yeah, and then you're just giggling like you're watching something, you know.
You just feel like a total monster.
Yeah, for real.
But definitely we recommend the documentary.
It's very good.
We want to talk about it. Anyway, also, one last thing that's off topic. One of my ancestors' name is George Washington something else. I forget his last name. But his parents named him George as his first name and Washington as his middle name. And then whatever his last name is. That's like, on my family tree. And I'm like, okay, guys. All right. Yes, you are related to George Washington, that guy. All right. Okay, so let's go back into the actual case. Now that we've talked about George Washington for like a whole 5 minutes. It's not really that long. We're only 6 minutes in, so it couldn't be that long. Born in Seattle on March 23rd, 1982. Karina grew up with her parents, Star and Ronald, along with her siblings, Brett, Eric, and Jennifer. Her mom, Star, was an artist, herbalist, and environmentalist, so it wasn't surprising that Karina also loved expressing her creativity and had a passion for social issues. In 2005, Karina graduated from Penn State with a degree in art and social practice. Her excitement was short-lived, though, because she suffered a great loss a few months later. In August of 2005, at the age of 23, Karina lost her mother, Star.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know, it's so sad and depressing. And, like, such a crucial point in her life, too. Like, she's leaving college, and she's trying to start her life, and then she loses her mom. That's so depressing.
Yeah.
After completing her undergraduate degree, Karina enrolled in the Philadelphia University of the Arts. However, she transferred to the University of Cincinnati, and the University of Cincinnati arts program would be a big focus of her life after she started her graduate work there. That is where she graduated with her Master of Fine Arts and where she went on to teach some classes. After graduating, she worked as an artist and an educator, and up until 2016, she taught classes on art, social practice, sculpture, and design at the University of Cincinnati. She exhibited her work in shows all over the world, and she also participated in conferences as a working artist who was basically an expert in her field and would give these presentations.
That's awesome.
In addition to that, she also did community art. And as an example, she documented a project on her website where she and fellow artists planted flowers in old broken meters on the street to make their community prettier. So, like, they would make these concrete containers, like pots that would fit into the meters, and then put in like dirt and flowers. And so instead of having this old broken meter, you essentially had this like industrial looking flower pot.
Yeah.
And so they would do that a lot, things like that a lot. And she loved flowers. So anytime she could work flowers into her community art, she would. And some of the other things she did is she would make art out of abandoned items like old bicycles and stuff. Part of this was a focus on environmentalism. So like her mom, she was also an environmentalist. So she would try to focus her art on things like helping people understand how water was being contaminated or something like that. As an artist, Carina also used her art to explore issues regarding women's rights, the rights of minorities, and social justice issues. On her website, she wrote about the experience of being a woman and how she felt like men objectified her. And she really wanted people to see the person she was underneath being an attractive woman. She loved all of the creative fields, including music and dancing. And her friends say that she was a vibrant woman who was very effervescent. According to family and friends, she lived her life fearlessly and creatively, and she was very quick to make friends. And so she would build relationships essentially with people all over the world because she traveled a lot, and she would make friends everywhere, and she would really hold on to these people instead of just like forgetting them after she went home. Also, she was really funny. Carina was very active politically and dedicated much of her time to social justice issues. And she was, as I said before, particularly passionate about issues affecting women and immigrants. And just 2 months before the incident we're about to talk about, she had participated in the Women's March on Washington in January 2017.
Nice.
Her work as an artist is what brought her to Washington, D.C. in spring 2017, when she was participating in an art exhibit called The Fundred Reserve at the Corcoran Gallery at George Washington University. The exhibit was created by Houston-based artist, Woot Woot, Mel Chin, and it focused on the dangers of lead poisoning. And so part of the reason why I told you all that stuff about her being an environmentalist and a social justice person is because that's part of what was going into this exhibit that she had come to D.C. to work on. She was a project assistant to Mel Chin, who at the time was a visiting professor over at George Washington University. And he had picked her partially because she had this background and doing this social justice work, etc. And so as a project assistant, she was helping to put up the art and like run the gallery and things like that. The Fundred Reserve essentially exhibited like fake dollar bills that different artists had created with the intent of raising awareness about this lead poisoning situation. Like the lead was basically getting in the water and things like that. So that is what she was doing in the city. And while she was living in D.C., Carina had sublet a basement apartment in a row house in the 600 block of 14th Street Northeast in D.C. while she was in the city. This row house is basically what we in the South call a townhouse. So one thing I have actually learned from podcasts is that townhouse is a different thing in different places. Like in England, like in London, townhouse is really posh. Like it's like mansions essentially. But here, a townhouse is a house that's connected to another house.
Yeah.
So like we live in a townhouse. It's in a little cubby with like six townhouses that are essentially one U-shaped house divided, you know, there are three stories divided into skinny little three-story houses.
Yeah.
Like you see in some of the other big cities. And it's just a more economical way to have a house, essentially.
Yeah.
Like it's cheaper than having a house that's separate from other houses. Row houses here are normally like smaller, identical, close together, but separate houses. So that's kind of what I had envisioned. They're like, like there's a little area, I forget what it's called, but there's actually an area in our city that has a set of row houses that someone who was art focused had like rehabilitated and was letting people use them as low cost art studios for a while.
Wasn't that over in the art district?
It is.
Yeah.
I forget what it was called though. Something with row house in the title though.
Yeah, yeah.
In DC, apparently row house is what we call townhouse.
Interesting.
And so the street that she lived on had a lot of these. Essentially, the whole street was townhouse. Like, each side was, like, one long, giant set of houses. And they're really, really pretty. I was able to do street view and, like, walk up and down the street, like, virtually on Google. The houses kind of vary in color. Like, some of them are just plain brick houses. Some of them are painted, like, white or pale yellow or sky blue. The one that Carina lived in was gray, and it looked very posh from the outside. And it had great visibility, because even though she lived in the basement apartment, you could kind of see the top of her apartment from the street level, because it had some stairs going down to it, but it wasn't, like, all the way underground, if that makes sense. Like, the door was able to be accessed from, like, just going down some stairs. And so you could definitely see the street if you were trying to look up over the side of where the stairs are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so that's where she was living. 14th Street is a beautiful tree-lined street that feels very safe. Its wide sidewalks look like the perfect place to walk around. And I feel like anyone would feel safe there, although there are some statistics that Northeast Washington, D.C. is not super safe. Life in D.C. had been going pretty well for Karina so far, though. She was doing her art, she was making an impact, she'd already made more friends, and people really cared about her. But she was still close to her family and friends from other cities, and by late March, she felt like it was time to go visit her family. So she decided to take a road trip home. On Monday, March 20th, 2017, Karina was packing for her trip and loading her bags in her Toyota Prius.
Woo woo.
Yes, I have a Toyota Prius. I think we've talked about this before. Go team Prii. Woo woo. That day, though, her phone went totally silent. Awkward transition. Karina's friends, family, and coworkers tried communicating with her that day, but no one could get a hold of her. And as time ticked on, they began to worry because she wasn't the type to drop off the map. So they knew that something must be wrong. By Tuesday, March 21st, 2017, 2 days before Karina's 35th birthday, her family and coworkers had gotten to the point where they knew that someone needed to check on her. Now, according to sources, her family was calling for like a welfare check. But around that same time, her coworkers also were super worried that she wasn't responding to anyone. So a couple of them decided to go to her basement apartment to check on her. When they got there, she did not answer, but they were able to enter the apartment. Her friends went inside to look for her, and unfortunately, they did find her. But she was deceased.
Oh no.
Yeah. I'm sure that you're not totally surprised by this, but it's still very sad.
Yeah, for sure. Very depressing.
So they found her laying face down on her bedroom floor in a pool of blood. And her killer had also left a pile of clothes on top of her for some reason.
It's very disrespectful.
Mm-hmm. Horrified, her friends called the police, who rushed to the scene. At around 4:34 p.m. on the afternoon of March 21st, 2017, the Metropolitan Police Department arrived at the basement apartment and began investigating Karina's murder. She was tied up, and the killer stabbed her multiple times in her neck and side. Later, medical examiner Dr. Constance D'Angelo concluded that Karina also showed signs of torture.
Step into the world of Edges and Echoes, the revolutionary podcast that redefines conversations. Eager to broaden your perspectives? Each episode of Edges and Echoes features cutting-edge, AI-generated dialogues between fictional characters like an oil tycoon debating a climate warrior or a tech pioneer clashing with a digital doubter. Join us on Edges and Echoes as we delve into hot-button issues from healthcare to the ethics of modern technology. It's more than just a discussion. It's a journey into the heart of today's most pressing debates. Why just listen to one side when you can experience both? Click the link to subscribe.
Oh my God.
Dr. D'Angelo counted a total of 39 stab wounds to Karina's neck and side.
That's so many.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous number.
Yeah.
The neck wounds were serious. The knife had sliced her jugular, her voice box, her airway, and her carotid artery. The stabs to her side had also sliced through her spinal cord, her left lung, and her spleen. Any of these wounds could have been the wound that killed her. And together, they seemed like overkill.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, this is a ridiculous amount of wounds.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Karina's murder hit the community hard, both because she had touched a lot of people and because the crime was so haunting. She had been murdered inside her home during the daytime. How could something like this happen anywhere?
Yeah.
Later, one of the prosecutors described the case as everyone's worst nightmare. Because it is.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
Investigators began an urgent search for Karina's killer, and they had some crucial evidence. Specifically, there were security cameras in the area that caught images of a man approaching Karina as she loaded her car for her trip. And later on, the camera also caught this same man driving off in her vehicle. Additionally, Karina's debit card had been taken. Police tracked the activity on Karina's stolen debit card, and it paid off. A man had been using the card to withdraw cash at ATMs, and as most of us know, because this was 2017, ATMs have surveillance cameras. And so they had multiple series of surveillance camera footage, but one camera in particular gave the police very clear images of the man using her card.
Nice.
And you can actually still see these images. Like, they are so clear. Like, you can tell who it is.
That's awesome.
And that camera is what allowed the officers to identify a suspect, which was 28-year-old El Hadij Ture. Investigators released the images of Ture to the public, hoping that someone would call in with information about where he was. A week after Karina's murder, police got a tip telling them he was in Northeast D.C. sitting in a Ford Taurus.
Interesting.
Officers went to the scene and arrested him on March 27th, 2017, which was a week after Karina's murder. Ture was homeless at the time of his arrest and at the time of Karina's murder, and he had no connection to her. They were two complete strangers.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. I mean, because, like, normally when you see the overkill, like the stabbing so many times, usually that's somebody that you know. I mean, I realize it's not like a hard and fast rule, but I mean, that's so strange to see somebody like that you don't even know have that much rage toward you, you know?
Well, the medical examiner lumped in part of the stabbings to the torture because she said that some of the cutting was like really shallow. And she thought that based on this, everything that happened, all the evidence and the like the wounds on her body, it appeared that Ture was cutting her at first to get her to tell him the PIN number.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, God.
Because he stole a debit card. So with a credit card, you can just go spend money and maybe get away with it.
Yeah.
But to withdraw her cash money, he had to use the PIN number.
Yeah.
And so that is partially why she has so many wounds, is because some of the wounds were part of the torture.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. So they did not know each other. He literally just happened to be walking in her neighborhood and noticed that she was packing up her car and was in a vulnerable situation and decided to make a move. At the time that all this was happening, he had been living in shelters and just saw a crime of opportunity. It's literally the definition of the wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
When Ture went before the judge, the court held him without bail until his trial. And that's partially because he didn't have a permanent home and it was already hard for them to find him. So they thought he was a flight risk if they let him out.
Probably was.
Plus, the crime was particularly horrific and there was a sexual assault and a torture situation. So they weren't going to let him out before the trial. The case, though, was really slow to actually go to the court. The defense wanted a psychological evaluation to make sure that Ture was fit to help with his own case. As it turns out, he might not be, because in July 2017, a judge declared Ture incompetent to stand trial. And after a month of inpatient treatment, he was finally able to proceed to the next phase of the courtroom proceedings. Still, Karina's friends and family had to wait for justice. In March 2019, exactly 2 years after the murder, Ture faced a jury for Karina's murder and the related charges. And there were a lot of charges. It was a high-profile case in the area, and Karina's family and friends packed the courtroom to watch her killer face justice. The U.S. Attorney's Office appointed two district attorneys to prosecute the case, which is normal, but normally they're like both homicide prosecutors. But in this case, they decided to do two different specialties. So they appointed Assistant U.S. Attorney Jessie Brooks because she was a specialist in sexual assault cases. And they appointed Assistant U.S. Attorney Jeff Nestler because he is a specialist in homicide cases. And that way, both areas of expertise could be used to make sure that Karina actually got the justice she deserved.
They're bringing out the big guns.
Yes, some big old guns. At trial, the prosecution told the jury what the evidence shows happened that day. And we have a lot of evidence, so I'm going to walk you through this crime. As Karina packed on March 20th of 2017, the unthinkable happened. As she was loading her car, Teray was watching from the sidewalk. And that's not just speculation, by the way. Like, they didn't just draw that conclusion. There's literally video footage from one of these security cameras in the neighborhood that shows him watching her and then approaching her. So they have video footage of him approaching Karina as she packed her car. And she was moving in and out of her apartment, as you do. And he essentially barged into her home, like forced his way in, and then began this attack. After getting inside, he overpowered Karina and effectively kidnapped her. He was charged with kidnapping, even though he never removed her from the home. But it's because he prevented her from leaving.
Yeah, like it's basically kidnapping in place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then he sexually assaulted her. And DNA left on her body proves that this happened, as well as the medical examiner's findings. And the DNA that he left was both on her body and also on some black stretch pants that belonged to Karina. And he used those to tie her legs up after he assaulted her to make it harder for her to escape. As you recall, I told you she was tied up. He used her own stretchy leggings to do that.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. As she lay there terrified, he then rifled through her stuff and found her debit card. And he wanted Karina to give him her PIN number, but she refused. That's when he started torturing her to find out what her PIN number was. Once he got everything he wanted, Teray pulled out his serrated folding knife and started stabbing. In total, he stabbed Karina 39 times in her neck and in her side. And as I said before, he damaged a lot of organs and her artery. It's just like absurd how much damage that he caused to her body. Later, he left this knife in her Toyota Prius for the police to find.
Wow.
I mean, I'm sure he wasn't intending on them finding it, but they did.
Family annihilators, kids with dark secrets, and horrific home invasions. These are the kind of bone-chilling tales I tell you about on Stranger in the House, a true crime podcast that will have you double-checking that you have locked all your doors and windows. Because we tell the stories that show that your home can become a house of horrors at any minute. These crimes will have you asking, what is a stranger? And is there one in my house right now? Listen to the Stranger in the House podcast now, if you're brave enough.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's nice that he left them a gift of evidence to use against him.
Yeah, it's like an absurd amount of evidence. Like, if you think about it, between the DNA and the multiple video, because we're not even done with video footage, because there's still the ATMs as well that we haven't gotten to that part yet.
Yeah.
But, like, he left so much evidence of this crime.
Yeah.
So, the next thing he did is he drove out in her blue Toyota Prius, which again was captured on camera, him leaving with it. And he used her car to drive to multiple ATMs in both Maryland and Virginia, which sounds extravagant, but you have to remember that DC borders Maryland and Virginia. So essentially, he was just kind of driving around the area and going to all these ATMs. From March 20th to March 24th, 2017, he withdrew money from multiple ATMs, and surveillance footage captured him taking this money. In total, he stole around $2,300. That's the figure given by the prosecution, by the way, because there's some sources that originally reported a figure of around $4,000, but at trial, they said $2,300. He later used around $1,300 to buy that used car they found him in, the Ford Taurus, so that he could dump Karina's Prius. And he was in the Ford Taurus when police arrested him on March 27th. And they were able to track down the fact that he had used some of this cash to buy the car. Also, how did he get a car for $1,300 that ran? Like, that, I feel bad because I'm horrified by this murder, but I was really distracted by that. I was like, 6 years ago, you could buy a car for $1,300 that worked?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's...
Like, what happened to those cars? This is some bullshit.
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
I mean,
to
I love my Prius, and thankfully it works, and I hope it works for a very long time. It's 10 years old, and I hope it lasts for like 10 or 20 more years or something. Like, I love that car, and plus, I don't want to have to buy a new car. But I know people who are buying cars, and they're all absurdly expensive, even like really old, crappy ones.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what happened in the 6 years that all the cars got destroyed. I guess I don't know. Pandemic somehow.
COVID. Yeah.
And who knows?
COVID and the corresponding greedflation.
Yeah, it's a hot mess.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, they have all this evidence. So they have a really strong case. The prosecution was able to show the jury all this surveillance footage, which documented much of the crime. Additionally, they had his DNA on Karina's body and leggings, as well as they also found Karina's DNA in Teray's backpack, which is also crucial because... Even though he shouldn't be able to argue his way out of his DNA on her, the fact that her DNA is in his backpack is very sketchy.
Oh, yeah.
The defense still tried to argue that Teray was innocent for some reason.
Wow.
Yeah. So they offered up, as one of their defenses, they offered up the idea of a different suspect. And they based this claim on the fact that there had been a prior incident in the area around where Karina lived. About 2 weeks before Karina's murder, another woman survived a similar attack that police say Teray did not commit. In that case, investigators were never able to make an arrest, so they don't have a suspect. The defense lawyer was like, that guy probably is a different dude, and maybe he also attacked Karina.
Hmm.
And somehow looks exactly like Teray on the video.
Yeah, I mean... Good on him for trying, but I'm not buying it.
This was a solid try.
Yeah, it's like a good effort, but I don't think I would go for that if I was on the jury.
Yeah, so as you know, besides the surveillance camera, they also had to explain DNA. Well, the defense had two explanations for the DNA. They, on one hand, tried to say that the lab maybe mixed up the DNA samples and it was a false match. But they also claim that maybe Teray was actually dating Karina and that's why his DNA was there.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, reaches that weren't working out for them.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not buying that one at all.
Yeah.
That's a big swing and a miss.
Exactly.
Right
in my notes I wrote, I mean, that's a strategy. Nice try, I guess. Like, I mean, I guess you have to say something.
Yeah, I mean, A for effort, but... Mm-hmm. You're out of there?
Yeah.
Like, no.
I don't know. This just makes me think of...
Apparently I'm on baseball metaphor right now. I don't know.
Maybe you just really want to go watch the Astros.
Maybe so.
I was actually about to bring up Supernatural, with which we are obsessed. I love Supernatural. Destiel forever. But also, I was going to say that there's been a couple of incidences where supernatural creatures look like one of the main characters and then, like, commit a murder to, like, frame them for it.
Yeah.
And I feel like saying that that's what happened... would actually be more convincing than the arguments that the lawyer made.
It was a shapeshifter.
Yeah, this was a frame-up job by a shapeshifter.
You might as well. I mean, honestly, that would give you grounds for appeal later anyway, because you could claim that you had ineffective assistance of counsel because your counsel thought that shapeshifters were real.
I think this might, like, tank your whole career, but I don't know. It definitely would. I feel like you could probably get some intense treatment, though, at a healthcare facility if you went on record at a courtroom saying that a shapeshifter committed the murder.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was going on with this, but that was their argument. After listening to all the testimony and reviewing the evidence, the jury convicted Teray of all charges. And there were a lot of charges, so I'm going to read them to you now. Okay. First-degree premeditated and felony murder while armed with aggravating circumstances. First-degree sexual abuse while armed and with aggravating circumstances. Kidnapping while armed. first-degree burglary while armed, robbery while armed, first-degree theft, unauthorized use of a vehicle, credit card fraud, and first-degree identity theft.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things that you and I always enjoy, where the prosecutor is just like, fuck this dude, I'm going to throw every single thing.
Yeah, we're going to do all the charges. Exactly. Because a lot of times you'll see something where somebody did something bad and it's like just first degree murder.
Yeah.
Not these prosecutors. They're like, unauthorized use of a vehicle.
Yeah. They're like, and he was jaywalking and he looked at somebody wrong. And
he was there. Actually, I don't know if you guys know this, but there was a no soliciting sign. So he was soliciting. Also,
yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh. We were just in. Where were we? Just in Denver.
Yeah.
And there were like so many weird no soliciting signs, including in front of some places where it seemed like they just didn't want you to park.
Yeah, they really don't want you soliciting
out
there.
Yes, oh my gosh. Yeah. God forbid that you have to pee anywhere in Denver. Jesus. Like, we have a lot of unhoused people here in Houston, which for some reason, I think it was CNN or something, was writing an article about how we're doing a great job handling homelessness, which is lies, in case anyone doesn't know that. It's lies. We have done a great job as a city of doing controversial policies that are not great for anybody. As an example, they will go clean out the homeless camps and try to throw their stuff away, which I don't agree with, because I mean, let people have their stuff. Like, I'm not pro the poop on the sidewalk, but like at the same time, maybe if we gave them bathrooms, they wouldn't poop on the sidewalk. Just throwing that out there. But it's a lot easier to go to the bathroom here in Houston than it is to go to the bathroom in Denver. Just saying. I'm just going to throw that out there. Okay. In June of 2019, Judge Juliet McKenna sentenced Turay to life in prison without parole for his crimes. He will spend the rest of his life in prison thinking about what he did to Karina. I mean, he might not really think about her, but I'm going to imagine that he does. Although Karina got justice, it obviously doesn't bring her back. I always feel really sad at the end of these cases because I'll be like, oh, yay, justice was served for like 1 second. And then be like, who cares at this point? Like, I care, but also it doesn't fix the problem.
Yeah, she's still gone.
In the wake of her murder, her family and friends wanted to make sure that the world knew what they lost. She was a force for good, and she tried to use her gifts and talents to help others. She affected the people that she met, so much so that people continue to do things in her honor and post in her memory. She's the kind of person that people remember for always. As part of her legacy, the Art Academy of Cincinnati established the Karina Miel Fellowship in 2020, and it supports a woman, trans, or non-binary artist whose art focuses on social issues. These are things that were important to Karina in life, and now she can keep making a difference after her death, which I thought was nice. And I also just want to say, the fact that the school where she went to and taught literally created a whole fellowship in her honor shows what an impact she did make on people, that it's not just like lip service.
Yeah.
And also, like, when I was looking for information about her, there were a lot of people that are still posting about her and like posting videos and stuff. She genuinely affected a lot of people.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad that she was murdered, especially over something so dumb.
Yeah, it's tragic.
Mm-hmm. The artist that she was working with talked about how she was the kind of person that if he had just walked up to her and asked for something, she probably would have given it to him. And I know that people say that a lot in crimes, but it just kind of feels like maybe just having that personality is what attracts the criminals in the first place. And I don't mean that in a bad way of like you should be mean to people or something. Just that, like, I feel like that's why there's so many people that would help you that get murdered, is because that's like the people that are evil, well, not evil, but they do, like, the bad people take advantage of that. Like, they can see it in you that like this person is not gonna fight me, or this person is gonna like open the door enough for me to get in.
Yep.
Which is so depressing.
Yeah, it is.
We need those people. If you're gonna commit crimes, which you shouldn't, can you please target evil people? That would be helpful.
Yeah.
If you would target bad people.
Dexter situation.
Yeah, that's the reason why people like Dexter. I mean, he's not a good guy. Apparently, in the books, he's worse. I want to read the books, you guys. I've never read the Dexter books. I keep saying I'm going to read them, but then I don't. But also, apparently, in the books, he's, like, even worse.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm not saying he's a good dude or anything, because he's not. But, like, at least he doesn't murder innocent, nice people.
Yep.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, also, don't commit crimes.
Yeah, for sure.
this case is one that I actually found like a while back, and I've been just kind of sitting on it. I think I relate to this girl because I also am into like art and politics and stuff. And so I feel like maybe I related harder to her and that made me more sad, even though I'm equally sad about everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
Just throwing that out there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. We are going to let you go because we want to drink some wine and also watch Supernatural, which is currently something that we are very passionate about. And we hope that y'all are having amazing summers. It's almost fall. There's pumpkin spice lattes. I was just talking to the patrons about this. Pumpkin spice lattes are back, and you can totally have them. I give you permission. No one's going to make fun of you. This is a safe space. And also, today, when I was driving home from the pharmacy, I saw that there's a lot of leaves on the ground because they dried up and fell off the tree because it's really hot here. But if you're in an air-conditioned vehicle, it looks like fall. Yeah, I was like, oh, look at all the leaves on the ground. And I was like, oh, yeah, because everything's dying because it's freaking hot. And we have had some drought conditions this summer, which have been unpleasant. Because that's not... Somehow we have high humidity and drought, which makes no fucking sense. It's just like we're not getting the rewards of the humidity, which is like lush plants. I have a plant outside that Aaron bought me that literally has one frond left. Just one. It started out with like a bunch of fronds. And it's like a really expensive plant that now just has one little sad frond that's hanging on to life. Like, please help me. Help me. And we were afraid to bring it inside because it's toxic to cats. And we love our cats. But now the plant is outside dying. Because it's too damn hot. All right. Well, stay safe, people. We love you. We hope that you found this interesting. You can email us at badaxpod@gmail.com. I haven't gotten an email in a while, actually, so I've been sad. So you can email us. Follow us on social media at badaxpod. We have the website, badaxpod.com. You can go to our Patreon. There's extra episodes. Also, there's the subscriber feed that I know some of you super hate, and I'm sorry. And I feel like I'm forgetting something.
I don't know. I think that's about it.
Woot. All right, peeps. Well, see you later. Have a good time, and...
Bye-bye.